Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Glowitz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader and hosts a talk show on WCPT Radio, and he's here with me today. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, David.
Today I want to talk... We haven't even started. It's already funny. Today I want to talk to you...
Sorry, man.
I want to talk to you about a serious issue.
Okay. So I will not laugh.
That is budgets and money. It's been a few years since we talked about municipal budgets. I was prompted by a couple things. One, the recent Tribune expose on sexual harassment and sex abuse of students in Chicago public schools, to which the Emanuel administration reacted with a couple of expensive solutions. One is to throw up to $500 million at a law firm to investigate and make recommendations as to how Chicago Public Schools could address these abuses. And secondly, to expand the purview of the CPS Inspector General's office, which would require an expansion of staff. And the mayor said they'll get all the resources they need.
Yeah, I saw that. Okay, no problem. They're going to get all the
money.
Where's
that money coming from? Just to provide a little context for our listeners, the city of Chicago has about 8 budgets. There's the municipal budget, which is what we normally think of when we think of this city. There's the mayor's office. There's streets and sand. There's police and fire.
That's all in the municipal budget.
Yeah, which this year is about $8.6 billion.
Wow. God, it's that much, huh?
Yeah.
I've lost track of it. It just keeps rising, but $8.6 billion.
It wasn't that different last year.
I remember, for some reason in my mind, $6 billion was the figure.
Well, the Board of Education's budget is roughly $5.8 billion.
$5.8, okay.
And so that's the second largest, what we call sister agencies like the Park District and Chicago Transit Authority, but none of them come close to those two numbers.
What's the Chicago Transit Authority's budget?
This year it's $1.5 billion.
Thought it would be higher.
Next is Housing Authority at $1.2 billion.
Chicago Housing Authority,
yeah.
Wow.
Since we're on the roll here, yeah. Park District, $462 million. City Colleges, $443 million. Then we have the Public Building Commission.
Ah, how much are they?
Just $10
million. $10
million? Yeah.
Wow, okay. They don't have a lot of projects going on right now, I guess.
Public Building Commission, for our listeners' benefit, they're sort of the project manager of new building construction in the city, namely schools, other municipal buildings, but they've ceded authority for handling two things, namely the revamping of streetlights to LED lights. They've given that over to the Chicago Infrastructure, Trust, as well as what we call the cocktail train.
Yeah.
The express train to O'Hare.
Right, the cocktail train, yeah. The bullet train to O'Hare, which I hope will never get built.
But anyway, getting back to budgets, just in a broad sense, you've been looking at city finance for a long time.
Yeah.
Looking back over 20-odd years of looking
20?
At city
budgets. I hate to say it. It's about 30, whatever.
What jumps out at you as having changed over that time around budgets in the city of Chicago?
Well, first of all, just what you said about the Public Building Commission, a change, if it's a minor change, not a major change. But when I first got here, that was relatively in its infancy. I think Mayor Daley, Daddy Daley, created that thing as a way of getting these bond expenditures off the city books and onto this separate entity. So they're always playing, you know, games like that. What has changed? The first thing that pops into my mind, there seems to be less emphasis, I think, on the municipal budget as the be-all and end-all of budgets. And this was part of the dog and pony spectacle of the Mayor Daley years. He was really brilliant in his own little way. I don't know if brilliant's the right word. It's too much credit. But he was really clever about how he handled that budget, if you recall the spectacle. We may have talked about this down through the years. He would focus so much attention on the municipal budget, which is, as you pointed out, police, fire, and, you know, all the other...
Water,
et cetera, would leave schools and parks out. And he would put so much attention on that budget as though that budget in and of itself was the barometer that you should use to judge his effectiveness as a fiduciary overseer of the city of Chicago.
We should point out that all these other agencies that I named have governing bodies or boards that are appointed by the mayor.
So effectively, he controls everything. That's the way the system is set up. And a powerful mayor like Daley or Rahm will take advantage of that power given to them. But the game that they played, and it was really pronounced under Daley's year, he would have budget hearings. Like, he would be acting under the pretense that I'm really going to listen to what the people have to say before I craft this budget, like it wasn't crafted already. And then he would listen to them and he'd go, ah, yes, you want $10 million spent in the tree fund as opposed to in the sidewalk fund. I will switch it because you asked me to do that. So there was that pretense. And then there would be his budget address before the Chicago City Council. And then after doing that, he would go to all the editorial boards and then pronounce that he had a balanced budget. And the editorial boards, to a large degree, in my memory anyway, would sort of go along with this. They were so happy to have him wander into their boardroom. See, it doesn't seem to me that that is as pronounced a ritual these days. Maybe we're more sophisticated. Mayor Rahm, first of all, did away with the budget hearings, if you recall. You know, he did away with, we talked about that many
these
times.
Public neighborhood hearings that you were talking about that Mayor Daley created quite a spectacle out of in terms of having all the department heads line up at a front table.
I miss those days.
And sit and listen to citizen after citizen come up to the microphone. And it's kind of like your radio show. You don't call in it.
Yes.
Just talk about anything under the
sun.
Anything,
yeah.
Supreme
Except
Court.
You don't have to bow down to me like you have to do with Daley. But yes, we'll still let you on the radio show. It just seems to me that there's not as much emphasis on that budget process. And the editorial boards are a little more sophisticated about being played. And
then or now?
Now. And I think they're a little more sophisticated now. Back in those days, they would like welcome Mayor Daley and, oh, what a sophisticated manager. You know, this is in the 90s. This is a lot of that stuff going on. And there also seems to be a little more awareness about that. While he's putting all this attention on the municipal budget, there's that Board of Education budget, which is forever, quote unquote, broke. You know, they're always talking about how broke they are. Although, as you alluded, there's always seems to be a little extra money floating around for a law firm. Isn't that funny how that works? There's no money for special ed, but there's money for a law firm. So when I think about how the budget process works, I view it as a creation of Mayor Daley, the modern budget process, the post-Harold Washington budget process. But it seems, just my memory, that there's less emphasis on the municipal part of that budget, either because there's fewer reporters around town to cover it, or they're a little more sophisticated and they realize that it's all a dog and pony show and they're being used, or he doesn't have the public hearing anymore, so there's a less attention from that. Community groups don't have an access to weigh in and participate, which is exactly why he got rid of that. So it just seems to me, on that level alone.
I wonder about the impact or the efficacy of having community budget hearings like the ones that Mayor Daley had. If my memory serves correctly, when Mayor Emanuel introduced his first budget in 2011, which is, I think, the last time we talked about this, he attempted to do the same kind of thing that Mayor Daley did, and it didn't go well.
No, well, he changed it.
Instead of having all the department heads, he did like a talk show.
Yes, he did. It's like Oprah.
Yeah.
And I went to the one at Kennedy King in Englewood, I believe it was in August of 2011. Mayor Rahm was alone on the stage with the woman who was the chancellor of the city colleges, and she interviewed, quote unquote, interviewed him. Scattered throughout the crowd were department heads. So Daley had it
head table,
like the Last Supper, you know, where he would be in the middle and his apostles would be on either side of him, and you would have the police chief, the fire chief. It really was democracy. I mean, you could ask, I have a question for Streets and Sand. And then Daley would say, hey, how come you haven't paved this guy's street? And the Streets and Sand guy would go.
So you think there was real accountability?
I don't know if I would say it was real, but I would say there was the pretense of accountability. I made fun of it relentlessly when it was going on, but I missed it when it ended, and I think it should be brought back.
What have we lost? Yes, it makes citizens feel better to be able to confront the head of streets and sanitation or the head of the water department. But is there any other value besides that?
Yeah, the value is you get to put on the public record directly to the mayor whatever your point of view is. It's democracy in its rawest form. So let's say you're a community group that was really concerned about the TIF program.
Tax increment financing.
And you wanted more money spent in your neighborhood. You could go before the mayor. And you could say, Mr. Mayor, I'm speaking to you now about this program, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, blah, 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 blah. That gave you the sense that you were directly
influencing,
connecting and influencing the mayor. That gave him the sense of what he had to do to win people like you over. He could turn to his planning commissioner and say, I want this answered. And then there would usually be some kind of interaction. So even if it was just the pretense of democracy, that's better than not even pretending that we have democracy.
He was receiving input.
That's a very good way of putting it. He was receiving input. What he did with it, of course, is varied from what the input was. If he didn't want to hear the input, he just disregarded it. In some cases, he may have liked it, and there would have been a response. There was this funny response. I remember telling you about this, where the man complained about a pothole. They not only filled in the pothole, but they filled it in so much that there suddenly was a ridge. You remember that one? It was hilarious. So the next year, he was complaining, that thing, it's like a hill in the middle of the street. So that was Daley's style, and I've heard so many Chicagoans say, Daley loves Chicago. He loved the city. I don't hear people say that about Rahm.
So let's fast forward to the Emanuel public budget hearings. He did this, what you called Oprah style.
He had the Oprah style one in 2011 and got very offended when city workers, unionized city workers, began to object publicly to him about cutoffs and layoffs. I remember he was contemptuous of them, and he just dismissed it as just like a setup, an organized setup.
On stage.
Yeah, from the stage. And he made kind of sarcastic remarks. He engaged with the people in a sort of a contemptuous way that Mayor Daley never did. Mayor Daley, I've been through so many of these hearings. Say what you will about Mayor Daley, I spent many years criticizing him, that's for sure. He could handle one of these meetings.
Not just one. He had several every year.
Several of them, yeah. And he would deflect. One of the ways he would do it, he would deflect responsibility to one of the the apostles who were sitting on his left or his right. Or he'd act as though he was hearing this for the first time. He'd get all red in the face and object. And somebody would be pointing out a complaint they have about the way the city operates, and he would be outraged as though he were hearing of that complaint was the first time. The heads will roll, that kind of thing. I can't recall him engaging the way Rahm did. He allowed people to spew, and maybe sometimes he'd say, we should be respectful to one another, that kind of thing. And
I do remember when people were not respectful to him, when they came up to the microphone, then you would see the stone face
come.
Yeah,
that stone face.
He would shut down. Where if people were, first of all, respectful, and secondly, if they were complimentary, he would be receptive. And sometimes he would say, if they had an issue, he would call over a staffer and say, go talk to this guy or this gal. And
do it all the time.
Yeah.
And people learned. That was the other thing. Chicagoans aren't as dumb as I make them out to be. They figured out that you could get, what is that saying? The honey with the flies.
Or you flies catch more with flies them. With honey.
So they go, Mr. Mayor, what a wonderful mayor you are. I used to love that, the buildup. I just want to say, you're a great mayor. And the one lady was talking about the sunrises under Mayor Daley. Like, how beautiful they are.
She got her pothole fixed.
And yeah, so then, you sweeten them up a little bit. He gives you what you want. Rahm, there's not that connection. He confronted the people. He was nasty. And, he was Rahm.
But he got a bad reaction. And after
that was it.
No more public meetings.
No more. I think there was one at Kennedy King, and then there was one at Malcolm X, and there may have been another one. I think there was just two, but whatever. After that first year, no more. He just cut it out. And then he brought it back. You may remember this. What a mayor. In 2015. And this was right after Laquan McDonald, the release of the Laquan McDonald video, the video that showed a police officer shooting Laquan McDonald.
This one is famous.
Yes. He was under tremendous pressure. There was an uprising in the city of Chicago because the police version, the official version of what happened when the officer killed Laquan McDonald was completely contradicted in most people's eyes by the video that was eventually publicized over Rahm's objection when a court ordered the city to release the video. It was right around the time of the budget. And so he had these budget hearings. This all was going down around the same time. I can't remember the exact timing. But obviously he felt compelled to be a little more democratic.
Accessible.
Accessible. And so in the midst of this all, there was that the hunger strike by activists from the South Side who wanted a
Diet High School.
Diet High School.
And there's an interesting pun there. Hunger strike, diet.
Very good. Anyway, they ran him off the stage. If you recall that, he ran off the stage. So
he was surrounded by police officers because activists got onto the stage with him.
Got onto the stage. You were there that night?
No, I saw the video.
Oh, I was actually there. That was South Shore. And he hasn't had one since. So I don't know how we got on this tangent, this discourse about the budget. But when I think of the city and the budget process, I think that eliminating those public assemblies where the citizens got to directly confront the mayor, their mayor, was a significant loss.
Well, I'm interested in where are the opportunities now? How can citizens get input into the budget process? Just to step back a bit to give an overview of how it is supposed to work according to law, according to city procedure, when there is a municipal budget being formulated. And I should say that the fiscal year for the city of Chicago is the same as the calendar year, January 1st to December 1st, unlike the Chicago Public Schools budget, which is July 1st to June 30th.
Let's confuse everyone.
That's the state budget, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, yeah. Very good.
So the general procedure is, in fact, I looked it up here on the, I have it written down here.
Right, man.
From the city clerk's website. First of all, sometime in the summer or early fall, the departments submit their budget needs to the Office of Budget and Management. And before August 1st, the budget director files a financial analysis with the city clerk saying, this is how we see things are going to go next year financially. And then based on that, the mayor's office publishes the executive budget, which is the municipal budget recommendations. And it details personnel costs and expenditures. And then the first public body intervention is the Committee on Budget and Government Operations of the City Council. So it takes it on and during the fall reviews the budget and holds public hearings. Those are city council-based hearings, and they're usually more than one,
right,
if I'm not mistaken. This was an interesting factoid that I didn't know, that the state law requires the full city council to hold at least one public hearing about the budget before they vote. But it's one hearing for the entire city, obviously. So that's how it goes down. Sometime between when the mayor introduces his budget recommendations and when the city council votes on the budget and the actual enacting ordinance, which generally happens late November, early December for a January 1st budget, there are changes made to the budget by the mayor's office. And it's been suggested to me recently, I did some training around this whole overview kind of thing with some urban activists, and they were looking for ways to address this very question, like where do we have a chance to intercede? And someone pointed out there's this period of time when the actual budget that the city council votes on, the final thing, is crafted, but the public doesn't have access. In other words, there's no second draft that's issued that the public can comment. Obviously, the aldermen are doing give and take. I mean, it seems obvious that the aldermen are doing give and take with the mayor's office and the budget people to make tweaks to the recommendation. Because you and I know that the enacted budget often resembles pretty close to what the recommended budget is, but there are tweaks.
Yes.
So it feels to me like that's the point at which the public has an opportunity to weigh in, and our elected representatives are the aldermen, and they are doing that. So in what way is there that opportunity could be seized by citizens to make sure that in those negotiations that their voices can be heard about the recommendation?
Very little, to answer your question. In the practical matter for Chicago, there's very little opportunity for ordinary citizens to intervene unless, and this is the point I was going to get at, they have access to aldermen or a faction of aldermen. So, for instance, as part of this process, not an official part of the process, but as a part of a process, the progressive coalition within the city council, and those are like, I think there's 10, 11 aldermen who are not aligned with Mayor Rahm.
Progressive Reform Caucus.
Yeah, they have their own hearings. So if you're a community group or a union or a left-to-center civic group, you have an opportunity to go and tell them what you want to hear. So working through a local individual progressive alderman or aldermen who are not aligned with Rahm have some impact at this, say, if you had a good relationship with them. But the reality is that city is so big And the people of Chicago are so far removed from the budget process. So it's not like a New England town meeting where, you know, the locals directly control their government. It's a big city, over 2 million people. So you're never going to have what you're getting at, in my humble opinion, that kind of great democratic participation in the budget process. And to a large degree, the budget will be crafted by bureaucrats working for the mayor and following what the mayor wants them to do. Whatever little democracy we had in Chicago has been pretty much thrown out the window since Mayor Rahm came in. And as I said to you before, it was kind of a public relations spectacle anyway. So I don't see much room for the ordinary average citizens to have participation.
You mentioned the Progressive Reform Caucus doing public hearings, and I believe they've been doing them annually since at least 2014. I remember attending one in 2015 at which they published a list of recommendations for additional revenue for the city and cost savings that included things like, for savings, having Chicago elections being run by the Cook County clerk instead of having a separately funded Board of Elections, and revenue ideas like having a stormwater tax for taxing businesses who have lots and lots of property that stresses the sewer system and levying a fee for that.
Neither of which was adopted by the city council.
And that's where I was going with this, is that the only input that those have resulted in is that the public comments at the Progressive Caucus's hearings are documented, and then they're read into the public record at a city council meeting. But as far as I can tell, there's very little influence that has occurred. And by the way, listeners, if you want to see a list of those recommendations, you can go to the description to this podcast at shygov.com and look under money budget. We have it archived there because it's kind of hard to find on the Progressive Caucus website.
Very good.
Let's move over to the city council's ability to analyze the mayor's budget.
Okay, favorite one of my little topics there, yeah.
The city council has historically, and let's see if you agree with this, based its own analysis or scrutiny of the budget on the mayor's Office of Budget and Management, their own analysis of it. In other words, aldermen could have their own staff members look at it on their own time and take staff time away from other things. But absent that, they didn't have a lot of resources to deal with that. So that's why we had enacted in...
What was it,
2014? 2014, the aldermen, because they complained they didn't have their own independent analysis, the city created a Council Office of Financial Analysis, who by law is required to do an analysis of the mayor's budget recommendations every year.
Yeah, it's such a joke.
Have you seen any of the annual Office of Financial Analysis?
No, I've seen their separate reports on individual items, but I'm not impressed with that process.
One of the reasons you might not have seen lots of them is because they're not published online.
Okay, well, that explains it. And now that you say it, the one I saw was sent to me by an aldermanic aide. Hey, did you see this?
I just got the one for the 2018 budget. I actually contacted the Council Office and Financial Analysis.
And they sent it to you?
I have to say, the guy who heads that thing is rather responsive. He answers my emails and phone calls.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good to hear.
But the public generally doesn't have access.
This gentleman sent it to you. Winnick, is that his name?
Yeah, Ben Winnick.
Yeah, he sent it to you right away?
Yeah, within an hour.
Wow. And so you didn't have to file a FOIA request in there. No. Well, that's good to hear.
And listeners, if you'd like to see that 2018 analysis of the Chicago City budget that is not published anywhere, you could again go to the description of this podcast.
Let's just take a moment to break down what you just said. The whole purpose of this entity is to provide an independent oversight that's, again, independent from the mayor's office as to any sort of major expenditure that the city is making. And so it's not just the budget. They should do a TIF deal. Earlier today on my radio show, you and I were doing a little deep dive on the relatively minor TIF proposal to spend $9.6 million, I think it was, to subsidize the Congress Theater on Milwaukee Avenue. I was saying this may be one of the few TIF deals in the world that I might support. You were pointing out that you don't see evidence that they had complied with the but-for requirement, which is the one that determines, but for this TIF, but for this expenditure of
subsidy,
this handout, but for this $9.6 million handout, this deal wouldn't go through. So that would be what this office would have to do. They would have to say, they would do a report, they would do an analysis. This is just one thing. The $50 million that ended up at Navy Pier from
Wintrust Stadium.
Yeah, we were supposed to go for the DePaul basketball arena and for the Marriott Hotel. Didn't even go there. Presumably, this office would have written a report as to why the DePaul basketball arena and the Marriott Hotel needed $50 million. And you know what? Obviously, they didn't need the $50 million because they ended up at Navy Pier.
Well, there's a wrinkle in the ordinance when it was passed to create this Office of Financial Analysis that, unlike Congress, that can ask its analysis arm, the Government Accountability Office, any congressman can ask the GAO to do an assessment of a government program. Aldermen can't do that the way that the ordinance was enacted. They could only do it by asking the city's budget committee chair, Alderman Kerry Austin, of the 34th Ward, to make the request. So she became the gatekeeper of all those requests.
She's a big ROM ally. So she's not going to do it if the mayor isn't going to greenlight it. One of the things you asked me what is different about the way the city is run than developed over the years is the role, the rising role of the inspector general. We have an inspector general on the city side, Joe Ferguson. That's the guy who has a job now. Before him was David Hoffman. That position has proved to be pretty much independent from the mayor, and it's irritated the mayor to no end, the person who held it. The most notable one was David Hoffman, who I believe was after the council had already approved the parking meter deal. Hoffman came out with a condemnation of it. I think it was after they had approved it. Maybe it was right before it, whatever. Even if it was before it, they ignored him anyway. But the point is, Hoffman's report, he was prophetic. He was right in his criticism of the deal, and it really irritated the hell out of Mayor Daley. But that was one instance where you had an independent oversight, somebody not beholden to the mayor, someone who felt no obligation to toe the mayoral line, critiquing a major program by the city, and the city passed it anyway, and it's been a disaster, a debacle.
It's a money loser, isn't what it is.
It's a money loser, yeah. It was a terrible money loser. We borrowed $1 billion. This is rough numbers. And we're going to end up paying $10 billion in revenue fees for that $1 billion that they put up front. So it was a terrible deal for the city of Chicago. Even Mayor Rahm acknowledges
great
that.
Great deal for investors.
Great deal for the consortium of investors who came together for that, including some unions, by the way. And then at the Board of Education, I've noticed that the Inspector General for the Board of Education has been speaking up more and taking a more independent role in things like whether a law firm, this is what Forrest Claypool, the last CEO, went down for, whether, you know, that law firm that he gave business to should have gotten it, warranted the business, that kind of thing. And now with the issue of sexual predators in the school, they're going to take over some of the investigation there. So what I'm seeing is, like, maybe that's where we're heading more and more anyway, with these separate entities which have their own little payrolls where the inspector general determines who he hires is not answerable to the mayor. Maybe that will be the oversight, and it will be necessitated by these huge, embarrassing scandals. That is our only saving grace, because I don't think you can expect the mayor to police himself. I think that's sort of been established under both Mayor Daley and Mayor Rahm. And so that's why the notion that this legislative oversight body that is controlled by a legislator who is controlled by Mayor Rahm is going to be a legitimate overseer.
I should add that this past May, a new ordinance was enacted to require the Council Office of Financial Analysis to produce reports for a wider variety of proposals, namely any proposal of a line item in the existing budget that will increase or decrease revenues by $15 million or more. And that's a significant change, and that does not have to go through the alderman.
It's good that there's a requirement for them to do what they're supposed to do anyway. But then the issue becomes, how bold will that office be in vigilantly reporting? I'm not confident on that level, again, because the office is controlled, effectively controlled by the mayor. This is one of the lessons from the sexual predator story that just emerged, if you can follow me on this. The same entity, the Board of Education, that was investigating the allegations of molestation, rape, inappropriate behavior by school employees to students.
The CPS Law Department.
CPS Law Department would effectively be the one who would turn right around and then have to defend the CPS in a lawsuit.
Conflict of interest.
It's an obvious, blatant conflict of interest. And I think it was the same conflict of interest that was at play when the city's law department urged that the Chicago City Council hurriedly approve $5 million payout to Laquan McDonald's family after he was killed without having seen the video, without having reviewed the video, without having the city absorb what went down. They had a fiduciary reason to protect the taxpayers, if you will. That's how they would frame it, from having to pay out more by just getting this over with fast, which is a lot different than protecting the larger public interest in terms of a case where it looks like a policeman murdered somebody. So it's this inherent conflict of interest that plagues the city and keeps us from having sort of like an objective analysis of all these issues. And I mentioned about five things, from a police shooting to a parking meter deal to a $50 million TIF expenditure in the South Loop. It turns out it's not even going to the South Loop. It's going to Navy Pier. How is that not illegal, by the way, to an annual budget? And so all along the road, if you have a government that's run effectively by one office, the mayor's office, and everything in Chicago is run by the mayor, then you're at his mercy.
Well, let me push back just a little bit. There have been some positive developments, and you just named the Office of Inspector General, the city's own Office of Inspector General, a positive development that causes that office to be shielded from mayoral control is an ordinance enacted not too long ago that guarantees the budget of the Inspector General's office such that if the mayor was having problems with the kinds of investigations that the IGO was doing, it could cut the budget. But now it's shielded by ordinance. Same goes for the Civilian Office of Police Accountability.
Yeah.
Its budget is guaranteed to be a percentage of whatever the police department's budget is.
Yeah, you have to have that. And I'm glad they have those protections. I'll point out, just listening to you, I reminded that the pension funds used to be directly supported by a line item on the property tax so that they would always be fed. We would never fall behind. And one of the first movements in the age of reform in quotes, 1995, was they took away that direct deposit into the pension funds. And lo and behold, we fell behind on our pension payments. So you're absolutely correct. You cannot anticipate government to look out for the larger interests of all the people in Chicago. More often than not, the mayor will be looking out for the mayor's best interests. And that's why you need these checks and balances that you're alluding to. So you have to guarantee that the inspector general be funded adequately. Otherwise, they'll let the inspector general's office die through attrition, just as you were suggesting. When you talk about what has changed with the budget in these years since I've been really studying these things, the basic central point hasn't changed, and that is the whole process controlled by the mayor. And we've had two mayors who were cut from the same cloth. One, Daley, was a little more concerned about the appearance of caring what people tell him. The other guy, Rahm, doesn't even pretend he cares, you know. But basically, it's the same thing. It's a boss form of government. And most Chicagoans seem comfortable with a boss. They feel invested in him. You know, if they don't like the boss or he's mean, oh, yeah.
We'll end it there. Ben, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, David.
Listeners, you can follow us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/insidegov. That's inside G-O-V. Follow us on Twitter at C-H-I-G-O-V-T. And you know that 20th Century Technology email, contact@shygov.com. I'm Dave Gloetz. Thanks for listening.